three questions you can use to solve 99% of your broker business problems. In today's episode, I'm going to share with you a conversation that I had with a $100 million team who is absolutely swamped right now, and how we went through that conversation, helped them identify the things they need to work on. And the second conversation I had was with an $80 million producer who's struggling to get his team, his underwriter, and his fulfillment to take on doing some of the sales calls, and how I use this exact same framework to just figure out, okay, where should they focus on work? I'm your host, Scott Peckford. This is your weekly 10-Minute Tactical Podcast. And before I jump into my conversation with to give you this framework, I want you to know that I don't think I have everything figured out, but I have looked under the hood of a lot of mortgage brokers' businesses. And so what I tend to do is like to ask lots of questions and then offer some ideas. And then, of course, these are very smart people that I'm talking to. They're going to go back and apply whatever makes sense for them in their business, because I know there's more than one way to build a successful mortgage business. So with that out of the way, I want to just give a shout out to our title sponsor, Finmo. Finmo is a Canadian mortgage application document collection submission platform designed specifically for Canadian borrowers. It's very easy to use. It's got cool features, smart docs, those based on the application, what documents you need, connect to Lender Spotlight. It's super slick, and they've even got AI built into Lender Spotlight now. Check them out at lenddesk.com/Finmo. All right, so there's three. When I have these conversations, I'll jump into the first one, which was a conversation that I had with a broker that does about $80 million a year. And he said to me, "Hey, Scott, I've known this guy for a long time." And he's like, things are going pretty good, but I feel like I'm doing all of the sales calls myself, and I can't seem to get my team to want to take on doing some of these sales calls." And so I asked him some questions, we dove into it, and then identified some ideas that he could use to solve that problem. And then the second conversation was with the team, a dynamic duo of brokers. They probably do about $100 million a year they'll do this year. And right now, and they have an amazing fulfillment person who is currently still on mat leave. And so we talked about, okay, how do we like plan for this? And what do you do between now and then when they come back in May? Because they can't wait till May. And so I'm going to just walk you through these three kind of framework questions and then break them down for you. So first is, when I look at these things, I look at the process. So there's kind of three areas. I want to look at the process. So is there something in their process that we can change? Is there something in their technology we can change or improve? And then we look at the people. And so I always start with the process first, because sometimes making a change in the process can solve all of it. It's sort of like the foundation. It's like the blueprint that is the thing that's before you even get to the building, right? If you think of it like a building that you're doing. And so one of the great quotes I heard Elon Musk say when he talks to his engineers is, he says to them, he asks them a trick question: what's the best part? And the engineers are scratching his head. I don't know, what is the best part? And he's like, the best part is no part. So it's like, what is the thing you can just remove and not have any negative outcome? And so that's the first thing that we want to look at, is there something in their process that we could change? And so the two brokers that I was talking to, their team, so one of the things that they were still doing was signing meetings. So they would do a discovery call, which wasn't that long. They'd do a strategy session, and then they would do a signing meeting. And so as we started to chat, I said, have you considered using video for signing meetings instead? Because if you use a video, you can cut that 30-minute signing meeting down to 10 minutes, or sometimes even, you know, around 10 minutes. And so they thought about that and said, yeah, you know, that would probably save me about 6 hours a week. And so the way these two are set up is, one of them is primarily the salesperson with the agent. The other one is more the marketer. And the marketer is currently doing a lot of the underwriting, because they don't have that fulfillment in the back end. And so they had a person coming back. So it was before we even got into technology or people, we had to be like, is there something we could stop doing? So that's the first thing that I always look at, is there something in your process that's actually making it more difficult? You know, some easy examples of this are people who, you know, this is rare, but somebody who's doing face-to-face meetings, why on earth are you doing that with clients? Because that's a massive time suck and not efficient in any way. And most people don't want that anyway. They don't want to drive and try to find parking. And there are some rare exceptions in really small towns where people want to pop by, but even then I would limit it. So the first thing is, as you think about the process, is what I look at. The second is the technology. So as I was talking to these two brokers, I started asking about their process and how refined was it. I know they're both very smart. And so they had just recently changed some of the stuff on the back end. And so they had a whole bunch of automations that were going out at stages. So you know, when your file moves from one stage to the next, they're sending out automations. And so that really helped in terms of just reduce the volume. Doing that actually reduces the volume of, you know, times the clients are going to be reaching out to you looking for updates, which means you got more time to work. So if you don't put some of those steps in place, you're going to end up you're going to have more touches per file, because you're not being proactive. And so we chatted about that, and they had turned some of them off because they wanted to change some things. And so I just made the suggestion, like, is there somebody you can pay to just turn them all on for you? Like, The problem is sometimes we think that we have to solve these problems, but it's like, okay, well, could I pay somebody a couple $100 to just go in and get them all fixed for us so that they're up and running? That is my default. In most cases, that's the first thing that I look to try to do. I don't actually look to try to do it myself. My question is, like, who can do it for me? And I'd rather pay somebody a little bit of money to get it set up because they already kind of know. But the problem is that if it's on, you know, these two brokers that are super busy, if it's on the salesperson's desk, then she doesn't have time to do it. If it's on the other person's desk who's doing the underwriting, who wants to be doing the marketing to go out and shake the tree for more business, that's not going to work. So it doesn't get done. And so if you want to, again, it's going to buy you some time by creating, turning those automations back on. And so if you don't have automations, then you should definitely be something to think about. So the second step was you look at the technology. So first we did the process and we looked at the technology and I was like, okay, well, that's really simple. Just turn them back on. And they're like, and then, but again, it was a time problem. So I was like, well, get someone to do it for you. Just pay someone to set that up. And then the last piece is the people questions. And so then we start asking about the people and what the and people is actually the most, personally, there's something I've been learning. People are the most important part because you can have the best technology, the best process, but if you have the wrong people in the, they won't follow it. Or if you have the wrong person, you know, as they say, in the wrong seat on the bus, it's not going to work either. And so it still comes down to getting the right people. But before I get to the people, I want to do everything I can do to make, set the people up for success. And so, What we talked about with this person that was on mat leave coming back, apparently they're absolute killer at the job. But as they start digging into it more, it turns out that this person wants to be a mortgage broker and wants to kind of build their own thing. And so I said to them, I said, that's fantastic. Here's your problem though. That person, if they're as good as you say they are, they're probably not going to want to keep working for you forever. So even if you right now, they come back to work and you solve the problem of them helping you out, that's only a temporary solution. So we need to actually come up with something longer term. And so what we had discussed when we looked at the people, as I said, there are, and is that maybe you guys need to consider hiring another person that you could bring on sooner than you think so that this killer assistant you already have can train the new assistant, right? So you bring on this new person, it creates increased capacity. You can have the assistant who's probably going to potentially, you know, move on to being work, maybe they'll still work at their company, but doing their own mortgages. And so now you have somebody that you can put in place to train instead of, you bring them in place, all of a sudden everything you think you've kind of solved the problem, but all you've done is kicked it down the road. And now you're gonna, it's 6-12 months down the road, you're like, shoot, we're back to square one, when I would say do it sooner and get the other person to do the bulk of the training so that you don't have any stop in your production. So that was kind of how we went through that. They left that and said, okay, yeah, we'll go back and we'll think about what we want to implement. And so the other conversation was with the guy that does about 80 mil a year. And same thing, back to the process. We looked at his process. And I've known this guy for a long time and he's very process driven and very technology. So I know that those things for him were dialed in. So as we dove into that, there was really not a lot that he could do to squeeze more out of the process as well as out of the technology, because that is something I've learned some, actually, this guy taught me some cool tools that I had never seen before, you know, many years ago. One of them being Yam, which maybe I'll do a podcast on. Love that tool. In any case, so as we chatted more about the people, he said, I've got three people working for me now. And I'm like, that's awesome. And they've been working with them for a while. Also awesome. By the way, little side note, if I meet somebody who's a top producer and they have constant turn, and if they have no staff that have worked for them for, you know, any significant amount of time, then there's actually a leadership problem. And that is a, that means that you are, as the broker leader, is not doing a good job of creating an environment where people want to stick around, and they either burn out or they leave. And so that is, the top brokers I know do not have that problem. They typically have people work for them for years, like a decade in some cases, or longer. And so if you want a stable business, you've got to get up your skills on the leadership side. If you don't, you're really going to struggle because you'll be constantly bringing in people, training them, getting them up to speed, burning them out, they're leaving. And then you're like, damn, here I go again. And like, you do not want to have to do that. In any case, he had great people in place, but they did not want to do this one part of the process. And I said to him, then don't make them do it. Like, the reality is that these folks were more backstage. So if you think of your business like front stage, you're up on stage, you want to be, and then there's backstage people who are happy to work at the theater, but they do not want to be on stage. And you're trying to force them to go front stage. And I said, maybe your solution here is actually to hire a junior you that wants to do the sales. Because here's the problem. If these backstage people, and I've seen this happen so many times, I can't even count. If these backstage people, the people that like to work on the backside, start to learn the sales side of it and they get good at it, and especially if you have a compensation structure in place where they can do their own files off the side of their desk, which, by the way, I would not recommend, then they're going to be like, wait a second, I'm working for you for this, but I could do up, you know, 2 or 3 files a month and make more money on my own. You just open the door to like essentially have them leave you. And you may think you're, you know, that's, and that I wouldn't. So I said, instead, what you should do is don't bother teaching the sales because they don't want to learn it. That's actually good. That means that if you treat them right and you have a great working relationship, they're going to stay working for you for a long time. They can stay on their side. Hire someone else, teach them the front end, but you don't need to teach them the back end. I would not teach that salesperson how the whole back end works so that they, again, are more focused on their job and their task and their role instead of being like, oh, I can do all of it. And well, now they can do all of it. And then they can do all of it without you. And so that's something that what we talked about and said, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And so those are basically, I use the same 3 strength framework for both of those conversations. It's, I look at process first. I look at technology. Is there a process problem or something we can start or stop doing? Is there technology solution that we can add in here or we can improve, you know, if depending on what the situation is. And then finally, is there a people thing? And is with the people, are the people in, do you have the right people? Are the people in the right seats in the bus? And do you need to hire? And often we need to hire before we think we do. And it usually you want to get ahead of it because by the time you are redlining, it's probably too late. One last thing that I just talked about letting, you know, if you have people, staff members or team members working for you and letting them, I would not personally let them do files on their own, like on off the side of their desk. Here's because they do one, they go, wow, that was pretty good money. And I didn't take that much work. So what we've done in the past is that we would say, okay, if let's say if you have a very defined process, which I recommend you do, you got a sales, you know, you got the discovery call, the strategy call, you got somebody who does fulfillment, maybe you got the underwriting, however that whole build machine works. You think of it like an assembly line. If they bring in leads, that's awesome, but they still talk to the lead person that does the sale. They still have, everybody does their same job. What you don't want is having people jumping around doing other jobs because it's a distraction from their main job. And also you end up creating a environment where they're just going to be like, why am I doing this? I should just leave. Anyway, I hope you find that helpful. And next time that you're trying to solve a problem, I'd encourage you to think about it that way. Think about process, think about technology, think about people in that order and see if that helps you. Thanks again for listening to this episode. If you haven't followed me on Instagram, I've been putting a lot more tactical content on there. You can go check that out on Instagram. And I will see you on the next episode.